All right. Hello, and welcome to the Fresh Pest Podcast, a podcast where we talk about everything juicing, industry discussions, stories, and advice. This is the show for anyone looking to learn a little bit more about the cidery or cold-pressed juice business. I'm your host for today, Nathan Riddell, and today we're going to be talking to Emily Ritchie with the Northwest Cider Association. She is the executive director there. We'll be talking about the ins and the outs of the Northwest Cider Association, industry that I really love working with, and we'll be offering listeners some happy news at the end. So be sure to listen all the way through for the details. So, Emily, thank you for joining us here today. You have been with the Northwest Cider Association for at least as long as I've been working with the industry, and you are currently the executive director there and a champion, really, of cider and the industry, in my mind.
Thank you for saying that. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. I mean, I've watched you work pretty tirelessly at nurturing cider culture and promoting it as a beverage within the industry, empowering cidery members, really working and going to bat for folks in the Pacific Northwest for years now, and also just supporting the production of really good quality cider, which I think is maybe something we both love about the industry, is how much good cider comes out of the Pacific Northwest.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I fell in love with the cider industry because of the cider. And that's the reason I'm in this job. And so it's very straightforward for me to advocate for makers and just to do it. You know, we have a whole strategic plan I can tell you about, and, you know, but it really comes from a passion and a love of the people in this industry, as well as the product they're making here in the Pacific Northwest.
Absolutely. The community, I don't think, can be understated. It's one of my favorite things about the industry. And, you know, maybe you can tell us a bit more about how you got involved with the cider industry too, because I know you have worked with like the Food Corps program through the Oregon Department of Agriculture's marketing department, I believe. Mm-hmm. Food sustainability is a passion of yours, and in your free time, you're gardening at home as well. Have lots of hobbies. You make some cider at home as well, right?
I have made cider, but in the last few years have given up the process and preferred to support my lovely local producers and purchase said cider, because it turns out it is very hard to make excellent cider. It's much easier to make cider that smells of armpits or dirty socks, which is what I ended up doing, and which is why I'm not a cider maker.
Fair enough. Credit where credit's due.
My background is definitely in food and beverage marketing. I started right out of college teaching kids about healthy eating through growing their own food and cooking with it. There are many studies out there that show that if you, usually kids, grow your own or cook your own, you're so much more likely to want to eat it. And so the Oregon Department of Agriculture saw that as really straightforward marketing, basically, of local produce to kids, which feels weird and kind of icky to say, but also really wonderful to give kids the opportunity to grow their own, you know, lettuce or carrots or whatnot. And it was very rewarding, but I also realized I'm not someone who wants to be in a classroom all the time. It is really hard to be a teacher. So props to everyone out there who are teachers of young kids. So I've always really loved to know where my food comes from. I love getting my hands dirty. Being in the garden is really cathartic for me. And in my role as the Food Corps Fellow at the Oregon Department of Agriculture, I was also looking at other food products that we could get into schools. Not just introducing kids to local produce, but we turned to seafood because Oregon has a giant coast, a great seafood industry. We brought in local seafood into the schools, and we called the program Boat to School instead of Farm to School. So long story short, this was a pretty innovative program when I did it over a decade ago, and I was invited by Slow Food International to speak at Terra Madre, which is a international biannual every other year conference in Italy, to speak about this program. While there, fell in love with cider. That was, there's like four warehouses of incredible foods they serve, and there were a few cider makers from France there that year. I know there have been makers from Vermont who have gone, from England, etc. But the year I was there, there were some cideries from Brittany. So I decided to stay on and visit cideries in England after this trip. I ended up spending 3 months in Italy farming and getting to know the food system there, and then stay on. And I met Tom Oliver when I was on my grand tour of Herefordshire Cider. He's an incredible mentor and advocate for global cider, makes beautiful farm-based cider in the West Country of England. He connected me to the Northwest Cider Association, where I could put my passion to work. So I totally dedicate my connection here to him, and still love working with him whenever I get a chance.
Wow, I had no idea, but what an interesting way to wind up kind of coming full circle and all the way to back home, really in a lot of ways with the Pacific Northwest. That's amazing. And you have a dual citizenship in the UK as well. Is that correct? I didn't know that.
Yeah, my dad was born in Scotland and grew up in England. He went to high school in Wales, so he's very much a UK citizen. And a very wonderful gift to me was that he, before I turned 18, made sure I also had a UK passport. All of his family is still in England or Scotland, so we go back regularly to visit. We have a wedding we might go to next year in the middle of England. So it feels very familiar, and I can also spend more than 3 months there if I so choose. But the funny thing is, he is not from a cider part of the country. Cider is very much in the West Country, and his childhood was in London, and that's not a cider region. So his relatives don't care about cider. He doesn't really love cider. So I have that UK connection, but it's such a regional drink that they're like, oh, I got drunk on cider when I was a teenager, and I'm not going to drink that stuff anymore. So my work really expands to trying to convert my family as well as a little local in the Northwest.
You're over there advocating for it too. Awesome. So, I mean, having kind of gotten your intro to that initial exposure to a lot of cider and different ciders over in Europe, how would you say that the similarities and differences extend to the cider made in the Pacific Northwest? What are kind of the unique characteristics or the flavors that set cider made in the Pacific Northwest apart from maybe other regions?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I traveled a lot globally for cider, and the more I do, the more I'm impressed with what's happening locally here in the Northwest. Like, I've been to Chile, I've been to many countries in Europe making cider. I've been to, you know, parts of Canada that are really strong in cider. And we are really well organized here for a cider region. And I wouldn't just credit that to the Northwest Cider Association, but people are really geared towards working together. They see that benefit of the industry. They see that cider, we're just a drop in the bucket when it comes to the overall alcohol industry. We're such a small drop. And if we don't work together, we stand no chance in breaking boundaries in sales or in, you know, notoriety or prestige, or even just getting on shelves, you know? So I'm very pleased with the willingness that people have to work together and the community that's here. It's really something special that should not be taken for granted. That said, you know, we're kind of in this beautiful blank space when it comes to establishing a cider culture. The Northwest Cider Association serves cideries in Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Montana, and British Columbia. And you being in BC, I'll say, like, you have less of that blank canvas than the rest of the region I work with, like growers and such. You've had cider for a lot longer, but compared to, you know, the Basque Country or England or something, we're relatively new, which I think is to our benefit, and we can establish the industry we want. We can set the price points to a certain extent that we want. You know, we haven't had price wars with each other down to the bottom of the bucket like they did in England back in the day. So I think we're in a really good position in that sense. And we're also very young, and a lot of, you know, anyone listening to this podcast who tries to sell cider, you know, we're not the top priority for a buyer yet. And maybe we won't ever be, but I want buyers, I want distributors, I want the gatekeepers in the industry to know about cider, to have a lexicon about it, and to be able to talk about it with some credibility, some knowledge.
Very well said. And I think a lot of headway has been made in that through the Northwest Cider Association, through the American Cider Association, through different things like Pommelier certifications, right? That conversation is happening. I completely agree. It's in large part thanks to the community of makers and drinkers who are really banding together in a way that is inspiring, almost unique to the cider industry. It's like nothing else I've ever seen. I've attended the Northwest Cider Symposium in Tacoma this year, and it always feels like a big family reunion to me. Like, that's very much the energy that's there. Everyone's lifting each other up, which is awesome.
It's really unique and something very special.
Yeah, and something you've had a big hand in. So props to you for making that happen. You know, over here for us, and I know it was a big project and is a big project that you're chasing. Is there any other sort of key initiatives or projects that you're working on to kind of push in that same direction right now?
Yeah, we're constantly working on that. I mean, our mission is to nurture the community, the economy, and the ecosystem of a thriving cider culture for our members, as well as for consumers. And we do that by supporting businesses, we inspire quality, and we tell that story of Northwest Cider. And what that means is there's three main things that we work on. The first is increasing demand for cider. We want to grow that pie for anyone selling cider. We want them to have more and more opportunities to sell. Secondly, we are trying to empower our cidery members. You know, there's so many resources we can make, but we also want to make sure cideries feel they can run a smart, savvy business and be successful in what they're doing. And then thirdly, we're also trying to encourage, through providing training and supporting production, we're encouraging high quality cider to be made here in the Northwest. For obvious reasons, you know, we want to all drink high quality cider, but also there's a detriment to our whole industry if some companies are putting out flawed cider. So just generally, a rising tide lifts all ships. Generally, we want to make sure the reputation here is of high quality cider. So how do we do those things? For increasing demand, we have a lot of consumer-oriented programming as well as gatekeeper programming. And when I say gatekeeper, I'm talking the distributors, the buyers, sales reps, media, influencers, all of those folks who have a channel. And one of the things we have is a map of all of our cidery members, and folks listening can go to our webpage, nwcider.com/map. You can see it. We use the Google platform, and it's really fun. So any kind of road trip you're taking, you want to add cider visits, it's so easy. You can see who's there, you can create your own itinerary, you can search by hours, etc. We also print a map, but it's, you know, everything's about online these days. So that is huge. I keep a printed map behind me in my office at all times to kind of get a geographical, you know, grounding. But I love the map feature. I love being able to visit cideries, and that's where you really connect with the maker. That's where you see the beautiful orchard, where you really experience the ethos of that cidery, whether it has an orchard or not. It's just so fun. And we're constantly trying to encourage consumers to use that map. You know, we have PR person on retainer. She's always pitching different stories. So it's really important for us to grow that demand, get consumers out there to see where you make cider. So that's a big piece of what we do. But then we're also switching to put a lot of resources in the next couple of years into gatekeeper education. And this summer, we have scheduled a consumer market research study with the Food Innovation Center, which is part of the Oregon State University. This is our second round of consumer research. We last did it in 2017, so it's been a while in terms of how research is done and how cider is consumed. And I'm so excited to see what will come up from that. But what we want to know is, from a consumer, what is going to change your mind to buy more cider? So we're talking to people who are not huge cider fans, but they're open to cider. Maybe they buy it once a month. And we want to know, you know, what is your experience at a bar or a grocery store, you know, or wherever you come across cider that's going to encourage you to buy just a little bit more. And that really gets at our, like, how do we grow that pie? We clearly love the folks who buy cider regularly, but we also want to get at the people who are going to buy it a little bit more than they currently do.
I've seen it myself, and since 2017, so much more cider has come onto the market. So many more people have started making it. It's a great time to revisit that. I've seen it myself in introducing cider to friends who maybe weren't big consumers of it, or who had limited exposure to a couple of brands. When you introduce them to a new cider, you know, that maybe is more representative of the industry here, they're kind of blown away. They're like, this is cider. I had no idea it could be like this. And that's work that has to be done. And it's great that you guys are doing it. I think, you know, you talk about how cider's a new beverage relatively in North America, in the Pacific Northwest, compared to the centuries of tradition that exist over in Europe with it. And I think that offers a lot of freedom to makers to not be bound by maybe some of those super traditional styles, and to play around with it and to use different ingredients like habanero peppers or guava or you know, different stone fruits that you wouldn't see done over there. Do you think that sort of the more modern style of cider and cider making contributes to versatility in the beverage that is going to make it a lot more accessible to people who are wanting to maybe explore drinking cider or try something new? And do you think that's going to be a big contributing factor to its popularity in the future as well?
Yeah, well, clearly it is a huge contributing factor now. I mean, when you look at the majority of cider that's sold in the Pacific Northwest, it is flavored in some way, maybe a fruit added or a botanical added. And actually right now there's this big trend in imperial ciders, so higher ABV, you know, maybe 8.5-9%. And so there's definitely an interest right now, and I think that's great. And I also think it contributes a little bit to a confusion in the market. I mean, cider, there's so much confusion generally. What is cider? Is it sweet? Is it, you know, what? Another thing that we are working on is trying to hone in on a lexicon and a language around cider to try and describe that difference. Because, you know, beer has a ton of different styles, and it's not so confusing for consumers now, you know, 40, 50 years after this boom of incredible craft beer in the Northwest. You know, people understand what's the difference between an IPA and a Pilsner, or, you know, a sour, or what is this, you know, barley wine. There's a lot of consumer education that went into that for decades. So we're really at the beginning, right? The Northwest Cider Association started in 2010. So we're like in our second decade of existing. So language is going to be really important, and describing cider to a consumer, but also to one of those gatekeepers, so that we're all kind of on a similar page when it comes to talking about cider and styles, is really important. So something we've just done is we worked with a team of cideries in the association to overhaul the language around our cider competition. So it used to be called the Portland International Cider Cup. We're about to host the 10th annual, and it is now renamed the Northwest Cider Cup. This is open to all cideries making cider in the Pacific Northwest, whether they're members of the association or not. And really, it's designed, it's a competition to help encourage everyone to compete against each other, friendly competition to make better and better cider every year. And we've had a huge increase in entries over the last few years. And so it becomes even more competitive. But the way this competition was designed, which was by cider makers 10 years ago, they wanted to see something that would actually tell them if they made better cider than someone else. They didn't want a participation award. So we only award about a quarter of the entries end up winning a medal. So an entry, you know, a competition category could have 30 entries or something. We're still only going to give 3 medals: gold, silver, and bronze. We're not like many competitions where there's sort of a threshold where you win medals. So not only are we really judicious with the medals we give, but every judge goes through 2 hours of training, and they have to come from the industry already, and they write clear notes to the cideries on what they're tasting, whether it's flawed, hopefully not, but also whether it's just like imbalanced, or they were looking for something else, or, you know, if it was entered into a category like single varietal red fleshed, and they're like, I don't really taste these notes of cranberries or red fruits that I'm expecting in a red fleshed category, maybe use different language around your entry. But also scope out the language we use to talk about categories, because I think that's really going to help this industry grow. We really broke it down this year into flavor profiles when you're tasting, not how the cider was made, not based on apple varieties going in. You know, we used to talk about heritage or modern cider, and we realized it's just too hard to draw that line. What makes it a modern apple? You know, like, is it 1950? You know, like, what is the timeline? And then there's so many apples, you don't even know where they came from. You don't, like, let's say someone foraged their apples. Where the heck do you put that? So we realized that's just not a great way of talking about cider. You know, what if the Granny Smith apple was planted 100 years ago? You know, it was confusing. So now we're talking about cider based on the sweetness, based on the tannins, and based on the acid. So and then we can also talk about any adjuncts like botanicals, fruits, you know, barrels used to age it. And then if it's a dessert, you know, like a pomo or an ice cider or something like that. But we tried to really make it more forward facing. What is it you're expecting to taste? Are you expecting a high tannin cider and will it be sweet? Or is it a high tannin and it will be dry? You know, let's try and talk about it with the end flavor in mind. So this is a big, big piece. We spent 9 months looking at the nuances, assessing how that's going to come out in the market. And we're testing it now in this competition, and we hope folks will join in on using this language. It's also the language that the American Cider Association put forward. So nationally, in the US at least, folks are getting on board, and hopefully it will be a less confusing category if we can all talk about it in a more similar way.
Absolutely. That's huge. And such a big part of the work that you guys are doing is this education, like you said, and that approach feels more reachable for the average consumer too, right? It allows people to start having more nuanced discussions around a very versatile and broad category of beverage that can take so many forms and have so many flavor profiles. So that's amazing. And I think one of the big industry challenges that you guys are tackling and helping makers tackle and bridging that gap between the craft beverage producers and the consumers, which is absolutely awesome. I think really the work you guys have done over the last I guess 13 years and counting now, even with my 6 years in the industry, I've seen the conversations change. So just kudos to you guys for the work you're doing there. The other thing I did not touch on enough, but wanted to absolutely check out the Northwest Cider Association's website, nwcider.com. That map you mentioned is fantastic. I have used it myself to plan out stops along the routes, and I noticed very recently that you guys did have the hours and availability and everything worked into that platform too, which makes it really easy to go out and get a glass of cider and try something different, you know, support. Yeah, local producers. That covers the bulk of the questions that I had for you today, Emily. But if you have anything else that you would like to mention as far as big industry news, I know there is one change to the schedule events going on next year from the norm. If you want to let us know about that, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, I'm very excited about this. So annually, we normally run the Northwest Cider Symposium, which is traditionally in Tacoma, Washington. It's really in the middle of our region and easier to get to by airplane, et cetera, or driving. And that is an incredible conference for local cider makers to meet, to learn from each other, to connect and to grow their businesses. Excitingly, we're not going to be running that this year because CiderCon is coming back to the Northwest for the first time since 2016. So it will have been about 8 years since it was last here. You no longer need to fly to Chicago or Richmond, Virginia. It's going to be in our backyard, and it's going to be the week of January 15th, 2024. So we are putting all of our eggs, all of our staff time in helping to coordinate CiderCon and the outer activities that happen there instead of running the symposium this year. So the symposium will come back in 2025, but in the meantime, we get to spend a concerted effort bringing buyers into Portland to train them on cider, to expose them to the cider culture here. We'll be running all of the field trips. We're looking at field trips in Washington as well as Oregon on the Monday and Tuesday of the CiderCon week. We're also helping to put on the Cider Share event, which is so fun. Get your tickets in advance, it always sells out. But there'll be, I don't know, 60 to 100 cideries pouring the night before CiderCon starts. And we're doing a lot of back end work to bring in appropriate gatekeepers, whether that's media, whether that's buyers. And we actually have stipends for that. So if you're listening and you are a buyer and you want help getting to Portland, reach out to us. You can reach out to me at emily@nwcider.com. We would love to host you. We would love to show off the region. We're also going to bring back a special edition of Oregon Cider Week that week. And we say special edition, A, because we stopped running those in the pandemic. We don't run our cider weeks anymore. But B, because it's not normally in January. That's not normally when we're putting a lot of energy into advertising cider. But with, you know, over 1,000 people coming to Portland for this incredible conference, we will be running Oregon Cider Week. And we encourage everyone in the industry to be putting on fun events, but to be collaborating on those, because there's just going to be too many events for everyone to go to. So find a buddy or maybe a region, you know, like if you're in on Vancouver Island, let's say, like buddy up with several cideries there who want to put on an event in Portland during Oregon Cider Week, and we will help you promote it. We have grant funds to put out ads to get consumers involved, and also clearly your colleagues from all over the country and the world come to CiderCon. So they will be there to experience and see what you make. It's gonna be so fun. Jana on our team, Jana Daisy Ensign, is in charge of a lot of that. So Jana, J-A-N-A-D, @nwcider.com. She is your gal. You should totally reach her out to her if you want to be part of field trips or the Cider Share or definitely Oregon Cider Week. I'm so thrilled it's coming, and we have a great partnership with the American Cider Association. Their director, Michelle, is also based in Portland where I live, so we can meet up to plan things like this, and it's totally a privilege that we're both based in Portland. The Cider Institute of North America is also part of coordinating it, and they help with education pieces. So it's just going to be a really well-oiled machine and such a fun event.
I don't think that can be overstated. It is always a highlight of the year for us to attend. It is an absolute blast. I would encourage anyone who's even remotely interested to go. Thank you, Emily. I think that it embodies, you know, the collaborative spirit that we've referenced a few times through this, that the ACA, the Northwest Cider Association, are working together. And as Emily said, we encourage you to work together to put on those events and, yeah, absolutely to make this a very exciting return to the Northwest for CiderCon. We are beyond excited for it as well. So thank you so much, Emily. I guess, finally, could you maybe share with our listeners just a memorable or an inspiring story that demonstrates a positive impact that cider has had on individuals or communities within the Northwest region?
Oh my gosh, so many. I would say something that's very front of mind for me right now is we've been building our library of photos and videos to promote cider. And all of our members can use these. They're beautiful unbranded photos, you know, of people drinking cider in an orchard or in an urban tap room or whatnot. And we're about to do another shoot in a week, so it's really on my mind. But what's really fun is for quote unquote models in these videos, we usually like to pull cider makers or like their staff. Just like, we want to be real. We don't want to just pay, you know, fancy models to be in these photos. We want to have actual people who make cider and who drink cider every day be recognized for their work, and then also in these gorgeous photos. And the last time we did one of these big shoots, we brought together a few cideries from the Hood River area in Oregon, and we were at this cidery with this beautiful, beautiful picturesque view of Mount Hood. The cidery is called Golden Row. If you have not been, it's stunning. I mean, cideries generally are often in stunning places, but this one is remarkable. Like, I think at the front page of the Travel Oregon website, they even have some photos from this place. But what was really fun was, you know, cider makers are really busy. Cidery staff people are so busy. The hustle is real. And they don't always get to hang out with fellow cider makers or even their neighbors down the road because they're really working hard. So we brought together cider makers from, I think, three different cideries on that day. And they didn't necessarily know each other that well. But once we sat down around the table and, you know, it starts a little stilted, like posing with glasses in the air or whatnot. But then people just started joking together. And, you know, you're drinking a little cider. I love that about alcohol. It kind of relaxes you a little bit, you know, brings you together. It's a social lubricant. And it really, I could see that happening during this photo shoot. And I could see the relationships forming with folks from all walks of life. And it was a really beautiful thing and such like a small piece of what I do, but it really felt like an impact that will last a long time. Folks who know each other, they have each other's numbers now. And then there's also this proof with these beautiful photos that came out of it.
Yeah, I mean, thank you again, Emily, for not only sharing a little bit about how you got into this industry, what you're passionate about in it, what drives you, and in turn, what drives the Northwest Cider Association to build up these communities, build up these groups of people and this industry as a whole. Thank you for sharing some of the resources and some of the plans that you guys have for the future. We'll be watching out closely for the results of the Northwest Cider Competition and looking forward to seeing you in Portland this winter as well.
Yeah, I would also just say we're an incredibly member-driven organization, and it takes cideries and allied suppliers to join and pay dues every year to keep us going. So, I'll just drop the very end, but nwcider.com, there's a join page. We really need it. We really survive on membership dues, and it's good for our community. So I hope if you are listening and you're not a member that you'll join. And if you are a member, thank you so much for making that happen. And I will say G-Sync Systems is a member, and we're really grateful for your patronage.
Thank you very much. It's a privilege to be a part of the organization, honestly. And thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to chat with us today. We will talk to you soon.
Yay. Bye.
Bye.